Transcripts, show notes with links, full credits, and other relevant content can be found at our website, itdidhappenherepodcast.com. Interviews in this episode were conducted by Annette Newell, Claire Rigetto, Selena Flores, and Aaron Yankee, and your hosts were Selena Flores and Mike Crenshaw. This podcast is produced by Mike, Selena, and me, Aaron Yankee. Thanks to the participants for sharing their stories. Thanks also to the Institute for Anarchist Studies, PM Press, the Marla Davis Fund, KBOO Community Radio, and the rest of our production team, Icky A., Julie Perini, and Mo Baustern. And thank you for listening.
Portland.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
Holla! Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unions segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am the Vice President of the American Federation, the State, County, and Municipal Employees Retirees Union, and the current president of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Tonight, I'm joined by my sisters in the struggle.
Good evening. I'm Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'm the Vice President of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, and I'm also retired from the staff of the International United Auto Workers International Women's Department out of Detroit, and I'm President and CEO of the Dr. Audrey Terrell Institute.
Good evening, listeners. This is Deborah Hall, and I'm the current Secretary Treasurer of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. I'm also a retired member of the Oregon American Federation of Teachers, a past president of the Classified Union at Portland Community College, and currently serving for the City of Vancouver as a commissioner on the Civil Service Commission. Thank you and welcome to the show.
Tonight, is our annual salute to the Oregon labor movement, with our guest is Graham Traynor. He is the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. Welcome to Labor Radio, Brother Traynor.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a treat to join.
Since our last interview with you, aside from the national changes with the AFL-CIO, we would like to acknowledge some personal changes in your life and welcoming the birth of your second daughter. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thanks so much. We're tickled to be parents of healthy young daughters, and our house is lively, that's for sure.
All right. Yes, yes. Congratulations, my brother. That is indeed what it's all about, wouldn't you agree?
Indeed.
All right. So I'm going to just jump into some questions, and we would like to thank you for our annual Labor Day show and for being with us here again this year. And so since we spoke with you a year ago, the national picture for workers has drastically changed. Are we watching the arc move and bend towards the benefit of workers? And do you share that analysis?
That's a great question, Deborah. You know, I think one of the things that I've been saying a lot when I talk to folks around the state and around the country is that this is one of the most exciting times to be a part of the American and the Oregon labor movement that I've ever experienced in my entire career. It doesn't mean that corporations aren't ruthless in their union busting tactics. It doesn't mean that corporate CEOs are pulling out all the stops to keep workers from organizing and raising their voices on the job. But it does mean that there is some wind at the backs of working people. You know, the public's on our side, we like to say. 68% of Americans support our movement and labor unions, the highest march we've seen in over 50 years, and 77% of young people support our movement. So they're looking around the economy, they're looking for who's fighting for working people, who's standing up to the boss, who's standing up for justice. And they're seeing the labor movement fighting, and they're seeing the labor movement win, whether that's Starbucks or Amazon, REI workers, and the list goes on. So I'm excited for the conversation tonight. I'm really fired up to be a part of the labor movement, and it's a really exciting time for working people.
All right. All right. And so are there any other things that you would attribute that to?
Well, you know, I mean, it's clear that the last 2.5 years have been hell for workers, especially essential workers. And so not that we weren't seeing a rise in collective action prior to the pandemic, because in 2019, frankly, we were seeing the highest collective action statistics we'd seen since the 80s. We'd seen the highest work stoppage numbers in over 30 years. So it's not like there wasn't a bit of a, you know, a fight back and an effort by workers to stand up prior to the pandemic. But you better believe that the pandemic pushed workers to the edge. It pushed workers to the brink. Workers, you know, bore all the risk, and at the end of the day, we were still often treated as expendable by their employers. And so I think that what's been really inspiring over the last couple of years has been obviously the resilience of working people and the wins and the campaigns and the innovation that's happened even in the midst of one of the darkest times in our history. But it's also meant that, you know, it's pushed workers even further. And now workers are being part of the Great Resignation and saying that you know, enough's enough. I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm not going to put up with a crappy job, no benefit job, where my boss treats me as expendable. And so that's given workers a little bit more leverage. At the same time, we're seeing these really inspirational campaigns happening in some of the most high-profile, powerful companies, brands, corporations this nation's seen. So I think that it's a combination of things. And you know, there's no question that it's now the labor movement's responsibility to capitalize on it for transformational growth, membership gains, organizing campaigns. But I like what I'm seeing right now. It's really exciting.
Awesome. And I'm encouraged too, Graham, you know, because being I'm an older person in the labor movement, what's really keeping me going is seeing these young people, they're not giving up. And that's what's inspiring me more than anything. It's just really good to watch, and we're winning. You know, I haven't felt wins like this in years, and it feels really, really good.
Exactly. One thing I would just say, sister, to that, I was talking to a group of activists down in Eugene, and it was so inspiring to, one, be in the presence and in the room of so many young people, first-time conference goers, first-time activists. But it was also inspiring to say the words that essentially you just said, which was, you know, what's so exciting about this moment is that the campaigns that we're talking about, whether it's Starbucks, REI, Amazon, Google, Apple stores, all of these campaigns that are being being organized, or, you know, these organizing campaigns that are that we're hearing about in the national media, they are almost entirely led and run by young people, by women, and by workers of color. And that, I think, is really an important note about what's happening in the economy and how our movement really needs to be a welcoming space where any worker who's dreaming of a better life can see themselves in it.
That's right. You know, and so I think what I'm kind of jealous about is that these young folks now will have the stories that, you know, like the generation before us had, who fought for all the stuff that I just walked into. I mean, there was already a 40-hour work week when I started working, but somebody a generation before, you know, lost their life over obtaining that for me. And so they're going to have some good stories. Yeah, you remember? So that's going to be some really good stuff. Yeah. So another question. What are some of the talking points on organization rallies that the AFL has been supportive of?
Well, you know, it really runs the gamut. You know, I think the Oregon AFL-CIO, as the State Federation of Labor Unions, you know, we consider ourselves a voice for all working people. We really are that big tent umbrella where we try to harness the collective strength of the movement to move us forward in a common direction. And so, you know, I think back when, to your question, I think back to the bakery strike at Nabisco, you know, about almost exactly a year ago. It was, it was underway, where I was out on the picket line working people across the region were out on the picket line. At the time, my 7-month-old daughter was with me on the picket line. And, you know, I think that was a really inspirational campaign because it was, again, a very diverse workforce, you know, an incredibly diverse workforce. And they were such inspiring spokespeople for their own cause, taking on this, you know, global giant, Mondelez and Nabisco. And so I think about that campaign where, you know, where the tagline, no contract, no snacks, thinking about Oreos and Ritz crackers and the things that Nabisco makes, to the Kaiser campaign where you know, I think tens of thousands, I want to say 60 or 70,000 workers across the country stood up to a healthcare giant in the midst of a global pandemic, and on the at the 11th hour before a strike was necessary, were able to get a good settlement. And the campaign slogans there were patients over profits. And we rallied outside the corporate headquarters where I spoke at a big rally in Inner East Side Portland. Recently, a settlement was reached at the Growing Seed childcare facility where the Longshore Local 5 was taken on, a nonprofit childcare provider, and we're able to win. You know, we've had, you know, campaign rally after campaign rally outside of postal service locations and post offices as, you know, postal workers and letter carriers have really, you know, borne the brunt of the pandemic of, and at the same time, the heat waves that we've seen over the last couple of years, really fighting for the reform of the Postal Service, which was finally got, we finally got done in Congress. So, you know, it really runs the gamut, private sector, public sector, healthcare, nonprofits. And the common thread is that, again, workers are fed up and they're actually standing up and doing something about it. So, you know, the taglines a lot of times are pretty similar and consistent, but at the end of the day, workers are standing up to corporate greed. They're standing up to being treated as expendable, and it's a really exciting time.
Yes, and we're getting more and more unionized coffee every day as well, which is awesome. Very awesome. All right. And so final question that I have in this portion of our show, and so how do we weave in and address some of the approaches to the right to work movement? Do we still need to worry about, you know, those folks and that message?
Well, one of the things that that I think viewers or listeners might not know is that in a state like Oregon, that's seen as a strong union state, every single legislative session, a right to work bill gets introduced.
Yeah.
Every single legislative session.
It sure does.
So the types of anti-union tactics that we see in other states and other parts of the country, we're not immune from. I think what's really, you know, keeps the urgency alive for me is that. You know, a lot of times it's fair to say that we are one election cycle away from those types of attacks that the labor movement sees in other parts of the state where, again, an anti-union legislature, an anti-union governor, you know, party aside, folks that just want to undo the hard-won benefits of the labor movement you know, take it upon themselves to fight us every chance they get. And so that's, to me, what really drives the urgency around political action for the labor movement. We have to make sure that we maintain strong pro-union majorities in the legislature, as well as a strong pro-union governor this time around. We've got a really wild election cycle coming up with really historic turnover in the Oregon legislature. We have, you know, historic congressional races with three or four different races that are really important to win. You know, we've got, obviously, the first time we've had a wide open governor's race in over 20 years. So, you know, it really points to me towards political action in the labor movement, never taking our eyes off the ball, which is to maintain strong pro-union leaders at all levels of government.
Absolutely.
So I think that's the way we can continue to insulate against. But again, you know, it's every single legislative session that bill is introduced. Every type of anti-union attack you can imagine is introduced. And the difference is it doesn't see the light of day because we have leaders that are pro-union and that believe in standing up for union.
Right. All right. Thank you. I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to the Coalition of Black Trade Unions segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week.
Graham, this is Audrey, and again, I want to say congratulations and thank you on giving us to our future women leaders.
Absolutely.
You gave us two beautiful baby girls, and I'm looking for their leadership. I just want to ask you a couple questions here. One is, prior to the U.S. Supreme Court actions of casting down Roe versus Wade, the delegates at our spring 2022 Oregon AFL-CIO convention, which was marvelous, by the way. Oh, I had such a great time. And the delegates there at the convention, we approved the resolutions reflective that reproductive rights are labor rights. So what impact do you believe this had on the working class?
Great question, and I really appreciate CBTU's leadership on this issue in particular, connecting the dots between reproductive justice and economic justice and labor rights. I will say that it was a proud moment for the Oregon labor movement and the Oregon AFL-CIO when that resolution passed unanimously, I might add, because it said really in the strongest terms ever in our history in Oregon, that unequivocally reproductive justice is a labor issue, right? And I think for many years, and you know, for as long as the labor movement's been in existence, you know, a lot of, you know, so-called social issues get sort of ignored out of concern for dividing a membership or turning off some members that might see the world a different way. But there is no single more significant determinant in a woman's economic future than when and if she becomes pregnant. And so I think that that in and of itself says it all. It connects the dots about the economic mobility and economic potential of women and those who can become pregnant and this issue. And it was really timely because of what now has happened with the U.S. Supreme Court. And so it was a really proud moment for me. Really proud that our delegates had the same belief and passed it unanimously. And it gave us, and frankly, it gave the Oregon labor movement more of a platform to engage in these types of issues. At the time, again, if you remember, it was several months before Roe versus Wade was struck down in the Dobbs decision. So now we had several months to do more communications around connecting the dots for working people in our movement. And then once the Supreme Court acted with that wrongheaded, just uncomprehensible decision in rolling back the rights on women's reproductive choice, 50 years or more, we had already done some legwork to educate and communicate about the interconnectedness. And so I'd also like to say that, the National AFL-CIO also passed a resolution at their June convention related to reproductive justice. And I know for a fact that the Oregon resolution was talked about and it was discussed, just like in Washington when they passed a resolution several years ago. So it definitely has had an impact. We're not going to get over in just a couple months the potential divisiveness inside the House of Labor, but this type of a resolution, these types of actions and messages really just give us the platform to to continue to move the dial. We are never going back. The Supreme Court wants to roll us back to 1973 and earlier. The Oregon labor movement is never going back. And I'm proud to be a part of that forward progression when it comes to being an inclusive labor movement and taking on issues like this.
So you see this as a signal to women that labor has their back.
Amen, sister. I mean,
yes.
You know, we can't ignore the fact that half of the workforce is women. You know, nearly half of the American labor movement are women. You know, we are, as Liz Schuler, my sister, the AFL-CIO president, likes to say, the American labor movement and the AFL-CIO is the largest organization of working women in the country. And so if we're not taking on issues that matter to the lives of women and those who can become pregnant, shame on us.
Mm-hmm. Here.
Yes, yes. I had, me and several others had the wonderful opportunity to take a picture with the president, Liz Schuler, when she was at the Oregon convention. And I love that photo. So we would like to give you an opportunity to bask in the light of Liz Schuler's election as the president of the national AFL-CIO. So what impact do you believe that will have on today's workforce and tomorrow's future?
That's a great question. I couldn't be more proud of my sister Liz Schuler, a fellow Oregonian, as we all know. You know, I wrote a labor press article just within a few days of her election, really connecting the dots for those who might not know her Oregon roots. So mm-hmm. It's really just so exciting and important and inspirational for us in Oregon to have, you know, an Oregon labor leader take on the highest office in the national labor movement. So couldn't be more proud and excited. And it's already having an impact. We already see more women in her executive office. We see more women on the National AFL-CIO Executive Council Board. We see more women and workers of color and those who have traditionally maybe not seen themselves as a part of our movement or been as welcomed mm-hmm. or included. You know, those folks were all over the stage at the National AFL-CIO convention that she was reelected at. And I think that we're just getting started, right? I think that we are at a point, we are at a turning point and a bit of a tipping point, I think, in the labor movement's history where it's up to all of us to do what Liz Schuler likes to talk about, bring the workers who have traditionally been on the margins of the labor movement to the center. Mm-hmm. And when she says that, she means women and workers of color. And so I think that is such an inspirational goal and charge for us all. And I'm really excited to roll my sleeves up and continue the work alongside her. Mm-hmm.
So how would you describe this political environment here in Oregon in comparison to what we are seeing in the national front?
Well, you know, it's a challenging political environment. You know, you look around and you see, you know, homelessness crisis or houselessness mm-hmm. Crises. You see public safety challenges. You see, you know, gun violence on the rise. And it's understandable that working class people, you know, might get a little disheartened and disenfranchised and feel like, you know, those in power are not doing their job. They're not doing well enough, right? And so, I think that I want to just acknowledge that it's really difficult for local and state and you know at all levels of government, any elected leader now, no matter how hard, no matter how good the work they're doing is, mm-hmm. it's never enough. So it means that here in the labor movement, here in our corner of the world, it's up to us to really connect the dots on the issues that matter the most to working people. So, you know, when we roll out our political program here after Labor Day, we're going to be talking about the issues that matter to kitchen tables around the state, the issues uh-huh. that are, you know, grocery prices, inflation, you know, and connecting the dots to what's actually happening that is helping to move the dial, like the Inflation Reduction Act that just passed the Senate on Sunday. You know, which is really aimed at, you know, lowering gas prices, tackling prescription drug price gouging, addressing the climate crisis, creating jobs. That's the kind of solutions we need more of. Unfortunately, we don't get a lot of those successes out of Congress, and it's a really exciting moment when we do. And so we're going to celebrate that, all the good work that President Joe Biden, the most pro-union president in American history, is able to deliver on, has been able to deliver on, as well as the pro-union majorities in Congress. And so that's exciting. But here in Oregon, we're gonna continue to do what we do best, which is to talk about the issues, not party, and connect the dots for who's going to stand with working people. You know, and when I think about the governor's race, I can tell you who hasn't throughout their career stood with working people, and that's Betsy Johnson. Betsy Johnson running for governor as a moderate, acting like she is the solution for all of the ills of Oregon communities, when in fact she's voted against the minimum wage, she's voted against sick days, she's voted against key priorities of the labor movement time and time again. And so we're going to continue to educate members and working people about those types of issues, again, that are coming up organically at their own kitchen table.
As a labor activist for many years, I just always want to bring out, and I love being a labor activist everywhere I go, I just, how can we become more involved in these campaigns during this election fever? You said some things already, but we just got to be present. I think as a labor activist, out of all the things I've experienced, we have a presence, you know, especially during this campaigns that we're involved in now.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that one of the things that I would just encourage folks to do is to engage with the Oregon AFL-CIO, orafl-cio.org. When we get closer to the election cycle kickoff, we'll have a calendar of events that are happening all over the state, and encourage folks to work with us on phone banks or text banks or canvassing, get out the vote. Because in Oregon, you're right, we have significant power on the election cycle.
Oh, yes.
We have a voting block of over 300,000 voters that are union members, household members, or, you know, folks that live in the household of a union member. And so it's our job to make sure that those folks are educated about the issues and about where candidates stand on those issues. And then at the end of the day, to turn out to vote. And our program speaks volumes. You know, the success speaks volumes when we turn out 8 to 10 points higher than the general public because of those direct conversations. So activism is key, but just to put a finer point on it, political action in this coming few months is going to be extra key.
Yes, yes. Can you just name just a few organizing campaigns that we filed over the past year?
You know, an interesting stat that I learned just recently is that recent NLRB filings for union election petitions are up 58% from a year ago. 58% more union elections being filed for than this time last year. And so that is so exciting. Obviously, we're seeing what now nearly or over 200 Starbucks stores that have organized. You know, the workers at Starbucks have done incredible, inspirational work both in Oregon and across the country. You know, we've seen the historic campaign of the Amazon Labor Union in Staten Island, where Chris Malls, the president of the Amazon Labor Union, has been just such a hero for the working class and a hero for our movement, and somebody we want to celebrate and lift up. You know, but I think that those stats really do speak for themselves, that there is a hunger and an excitement for the labor movement, because people, again, workers are looking around and looking for folks that will fight for them, and they see the labor movement being that vehicle. So it's up to us to encourage more and more organizing. At the Oregon AFL-CIO, we're going to be rolling out a new organizing website, a way to generate leads of workers interested in organizing and making sure that there's a cadre of organizers that are ready to follow up with those workers. We're going to be reinstating an exciting organizing program because we believe it's time. You know, the time is now, and we're seeing what's happening almost organically in some places across the country with these campaigns. So I couldn't be more excited about it. I alluded to it earlier as well, but you know, this climate is really exciting, and it's up to us to in the labor movement and activists across the country to really take advantage of it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So Graham, what are some of the legislative challenges in the year of 2023 do you see that's ahead of us?
That's a good question, Tina. You know, I think that it is a little early to have the fleshed out legislative agenda for 2023 for the labor movement. But, you know, you better believe that we're going to have a lot of really important campaigns geared up. We're always thinking about how to make sure when the legislature tackles climate change or enacts clean energy or climate policy, making sure that we center workers in those discussions. And so we just a couple of weeks ago actually had the very first Oregon Labor Climate Summit, where we brought union members and leaders and staff from over 25 unions together to talk about labor's role in the climate space, in the climate policy space. So we're excited about building on that and then being more united when we go into the legislative session in Oregon in 2023. You know, right now we're obviously eyes on the tasks ahead of us, which is to win a continue to maintain pro-worker majorities in the Oregon legislature and win a key governor's race to make sure that we have a pro-union champion in the governor's mansion. You know, we'll continue to look at issues that are affecting workers in the gig economy and thinking about creative and innovative ways to lift standards in the gig economy, knowing the challenges of misclassification, independent contractor abuse. We know that, you know, there are a lot of forces of technology that are impacting workers in lots of different sectors. And so we're really curious about how we can learn more from state agencies about the impacts of, you know, automation on working people in different industries. You know, we're going to be looking hard at tax subsidies, tax abatements, different tax incentives that get used by government, both at the state and local level, to make sure that we're not incentivizing or promoting low-road anti-union employers. And so we're going to be taking a hard look at public subsidies as a way to strengthen labor standards and grow union density. And you know, that list is, again, just being fleshed out over the coming months, but we're excited to first win big for working people in labor in November, and then translate those wins to the kind of progress that we need to see in policy as well.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. That sounds really exciting.
Well, thank you, Brother President, for joining us in our salute to the working class. I just have several announcements. We'd like to give a shout out to the 11th annual MLK Dream Run Weekend Celebration 2022. It will be held on Saturday and Sunday, September 17th and 18th. It's the 2 days of celebrating in the Soul District, featuring a series of 5K, 10K, and 15K professionally timed races through the streets of